Hello, everybody. Welcome to Press Pause, where we take a short break from our actual play show and do something new, something different, something spontaneous. This is Let's Chat, an interview show where we bring in creatives in the TTRPG space to talk about what they do and why they do it. So today to chat with us is Acta Delgado. Acta is one of our season 2 cast members for Of Kith and Pen, playing the delightful new Three Strings. So thank you so much for joining me today.
You're welcome. I'm actually pretty excited to be here, Kanzi.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like we haven't ever really gotten to chat because you guys do your recordings without me.
No, we did the auditions, and then we of course did the two shot with Matt.
Yes.
But after that, like, I don't actually think we've like seen each other one to one.
I don't think we have either. So this is gonna be a lot of fun, I hope. So you're back home right now in Barcelona. Is that where you grew up?
Yeah, pretty much. This is my current room in here. I used to have the bigger room in the house. I mean, not the bigger room, just like the older sibling room. But then the moment I left, it was immediately taken away by my younger sister.
Yes, that seems to be how it works when you move out. But you currently live in Scotland for most of the time then?
Mm-hmm. Up there in the old city, old Ricky, Edinburgh.
What took you out there? Why'd you go to Scotland?
So, I guess, work-wise, it's pretty dire in Spain and in Barcelona. It's not the best environment. So I just wanted something where I could be nerdy about rocks. So so I went up there to finish my studies in geology.
Oh, that's really cool. I did not know that was your major, geology. Is that what you do? Are you still studying, or are you working in that?
So yeah, I'm not working directly in geology at the moment. So I did finish my studies. I worked for a while, also based in Edinburgh.
Okay.
Got to do a bunch of travels. Got to see a bunch of like cool geological places. And now I'm a bit more of an office job, I guess. I say it with shame, but I do enjoy it, and there's a bunch of really cool people, and I can do things like this, so hey,
yeah.
How bad can it be?
Exactly. If you could, everybody kind of hates this question, but if somebody was to ask you outside of, you know, your office job, what it is that you do, like, what would you tell them? Like, who are you? How would you describe yourself?
Okay. What is it I do? So I struggle. And
okay.
I think I struggle creatively, and sometimes cool things come out, and then I end up in these situations where, so I'm not, I did nerdy stuff. I did geology, and I did theater for like a year when I was 12. And then for the rest of my life, I just wished I did more theater, but I never did more theater. And now I'm like surrounded by a bunch of talented people doing this. And I'm like, what? And I think I'm like, I'm struggling my way forward, I think. And then other parts of my creative life, I'm also now participating with a bunch of queer artists locally in Edinburgh. We're doing a really cool exhibition on queer microaggressions, and they're musicians, photographers. I'm struggling amongst all of you talented people, and some of it is rubbing off, and I'm really happy about it. But yeah, just trying to kick away that imposter syndrome.
What's the exhibition? Like, when does it go up?
So it's going to be 15th to, I also don't do time very well. It's because as a small sideway thing, as a geologist, you learn to think about time in terms of millions of years. So like, what's a day? I don't know what the day is. So that's between the 15th and the 18th of June in Glasgow. And then we're going to do a night in Edinburgh.
Awesome.
So yeah, it's a bit of mixed media. We're doing some photography, we're doing a little bit of short movies, we're doing some audio. There is a piece that is a karaoke of a song that one of us wrote, and there's a very appropriate actually. There is a little desk with one of the pictures, and on the other side it's a postcard, and you can write letters.
Wow.
Because letters are cool.
Yeah. That is one of honestly my favorite developments of season two is the letter writing club and then you all writing letters at the beginning of the episodes. That's really fun. Yeah. So since we're on a TTRPG podcast, we gotta talk about TTRPGs. How did you happen into this world? Like, when did you start playing these games?
I'm just gonna go out on a limb, and I'm gonna say like playing dinosaur in the in the in in, in the in at school. Like, I'm six and I am a dinosaur, and I'm not very sure what dinosaurs are, but like I'm gonna role play that I'm a dinosaur, and then that escalated into again completely no system. I did a lot of hiking around in nature, and just to keep each other going, we'll just like make these characters and these stories, and we'll walk and we'll be like, oh, and I will do this and I will do that. And then eventually me and my friends got together wanting to actually do something with an actual game system. And we started playing this game called GURPS. Generic Universal Role Playing System is crunchy as heck, but it's and we started doing that because if you've ever read Discworld,
I haven't read it, but I've heard of it.
it's absolutely wonderful. It had kind of like a specific setting for Discworld in this system. So we started playing that, and we started playing, I don't know, 8 years ago. That campaign is ongoing.
You're still playing?
We're still playing.
That is possibly one of the longest running games
It
I've
is
ever heard of.
super long running, and we've gone through so much. I've gone through a couple characters, and now we're actually starting like a second thread of games within that campaign. But we're not using GURPS. We're gonna go like for like a super 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 prequel, and the GM is gonna run it with 30 sword lesbians, and there's gonna be like this old age empire that was queer as fuck. And it's it, I'm so excited to play.
Yeah, that sounds like a lot of fun.
Yeah.
Is GURPS like fantasy based or can it be anything?
Anything at all, anything you can imagine.
So it's just like the rules and then you get to take it and put whatever flavor on it
Yeah,
you
but it's
want.
very rolls crunchy. It's
Yeah.
if you want like the opposite of Powered by the Apocalypse.
Okay.
Like both can do anything at all, but GURPS has rules for everything. And it's almost like an engine, and you build the parts that you need, because it does have rules for machine guns. But you don't need
Okay.
them if you're doing
Yeah, I
fantasy.
guess you don't have to do
It
that.
also
Yeah.
has rules for a fireball. You choose. Pick
Yeah.
and choose.
That sounds like a lot of fun. I think I've heard of that in passing, but I never knew what GURPS was. So that's very interesting.
Yeah, it's can be a bit gatekeepy.
Yeah, it was your first game then, GURPS?
Yeah, formally, yeah.
Okay.
And then I only started playing D&D, I think this year actually. Right when the whole D&D ecosystem was falling to pieces, I picked up D&D
You
and I
just
was like,
decided to play
what am I doing?
it. Yeah. Well, we learned that when we were playing Mads's Modern Magical Life that you hadn't played a lot of D&D, which again, as you said, the world is falling apart, so I think it's great because I think we're at a point where people are more willing to look elsewhere for different systems. But I guess how is that? How is playing such a high level character when you don't really have much experience playing D&D?
I think the most outrageous thing was me halfway through the game, halfway through being like completely destroyed by a dragon, realizing lesser restoration doesn't restore anything. I felt so cheated out of my healing
Yeah.
spell. Oh.
Some of the spells in D&D do not do what they say they do. Like the one that makes me so upset is Chill Touch. It's not a touch spell, it's a range spell.
It's
And I'm
also not
like,
chill.
correct, it's necrotic. And I'm like, why are we doing this? Why didn't you call it, I don't know, something completely different than what it actually is? So that does get me sometimes as well.
Yeah. No, but other than that, it was a lot of fun. But again, I'm very, usually very system skeptic. So, I mean, it wasn't fun because it was D&D. It was fun because it was you guys.
Yeah. Well, no, I totally get that because I've gotten to a point where I am like less worried about mechanics and a lot more focused on storytelling, which sometimes comes out in, for instance, when we were playing our first season of Monster Hearts, I a lot of the times was like, I don't want to ask them to make a roll for this because I just want it to happen because like it's a cool story beat. So I've like honestly, at some points, it feels like it's a lot more just like throw away that we can just talk and tell a story together.
And it makes things so much more fun.
Have you ever GM'd anything?
This year, 2023, is the year of my life where I have played the most, and I am so grateful to life for that. So that very long running campaign, I'm actually not the DM for that. But I've during this whole time I've been DMing games anyway, mostly through GURPS. We did, which was a lot of needless work on my part, because one of the campaigns I ran for like 4 years was based in Eberron, and that's like D&D systems. Why wasn't I using that? I was just really, really into the other system, I guess. But yeah, no, I still DM. I'm currently DMing a D&D campaign as well, with a few friends in Edinburgh.
So do you get to play in real life a lot, or do you have to play a lot online? Yeah.
So I've always played in real life, except for the dark times where we went online.
Let's just call it that.
Yeah,
The dark
dark
times.
times. And that we did play online, and I got like prep takes so much longer, like just trying to get everything. I love maps for many reasons, and I also love like techie things. So I will like get way too deep into Roll20 and then I won't know how to get out of it.
I've started like actually building and making my own terrain for maps because we've been playing, I think this is the third year we've been playing this campaign, and we used to just like draw on paper and like that worked and everything, but then I was like, but I want to have a little craft, so I chose that.
Whoa, that's super cool. I think the closest I've got to that is there was this old Kickstarter campaign that I backed, and it's like this boot. It's like an A3, two A3. It's like an A2 when you open it, and inside the book there's like maps, and there's like 50 or 60 or 70 different maps. It's pretty cool. And then recently, the group of players I have, they're pretty also like D&D and role playing noobs, which is a lot of fun to get like baby nerd into it. And they have so much energy, and one of them, well, two of them actually are doing now their own campaigns on the side, and they're beginning to print like all sorts of creatures and monsters, and they print them double sided, and then we have like hairpins, and they just, we're just having some little prompts, but yeah, terrain. I wish I had terrain.
Yeah, it definitely is like time consuming in the sense of like I'm doing it as cheaply as possible, which means I'm just take like building it out of cardboard pretty much. But like the painting is like, okay, well that was one layer. Let me wait for that to dry for a couple hours and I'll come back to that later. Oh, that's another layer. So it's a little bit time consuming. And I probably will only be able to use it for like larger encounters. But I just thought it was fun. I just wanted something to do with my hands, really, and listen to podcasts. So that's what I'm doing. Is GURPS like your favorite game to play in GM, or do you have other games that you?
It has been for a long time, but lately, and like the more I played it, I guess the least I did rules. But again, it's a game that teaches you when you're playing and when you're mastering so much about good game design, that it then you can start running way less structured games with still some structure of what feels fair to players, what feels fair for you as a DM. So I think it's a really good kind of like crash course on how to design your own game in that sense. So yeah, I guess right now, like currently, my favorite system is Monster Hearts. So I started running I'm currently also running a campaign of Monster Hearts, folks. We did like the first arc, finished in December, and then we're now working on to the second one. And I think, yeah, Powered by the Apocalypse is probably my current favorite system.
I agree. I absolutely love that engine. It just seems to work so well for pretty much everything I've ever used it to play. So, and it's simple and yeah, definitely like character driven.
We couldn't even avoid like shoehorning it into Wonder Home. What is happening?
I know. I know. I was like, I heard that and I was like, you know what? I get it though. I get it. Well, you know, now that you brought up Wander Home, have you ever played that game before?
No, I played it for the first time in the auditions, and I immediately became so. Okay, so that's another campaign I'm running.
Oh my goodness.
Yes, it's I'm not even I've not like sat down and counted them out of pure fear to just like feel like just disrespect for myself and my boundary setting. But yeah, so after we did the auditions, I was like, I want to show this to my I just want to make my friends happy, and I was like, I want them to play Wonder Home and be happy. So I've got a few friends now playing Wonder Home with me every now and again, and it's just like a super chill game. I really enjoy it.
Do you run the game? Like, are you the guide? Or, okay.
Yeah, I'm
I
the guide,
wanna.
but we're doing the thing where they can take over the kith, which is
Okay.
lovely.
Yeah, I was gonna say, I really wanna do one that there isn't any guide and we just sit around and like figure it out as we go. But that's also a little bit, it makes me a little nervous because it's so like what if people don't like step up or speak up and then you just kind of become the guide anyway? So yeah, but that's a really cool. It's my favorite in terms of world building, I think, because it's such a communal world building game that everybody gets a say in how the world works, and I think that's really cool.
What kith are around here? Is it these bucolic places? And one of my favorite things about Wonder Home, about Monster Hearts, about 30 Sword Lesbians is something that for me is sorely lacking in D&D unless you make it happen. But like these games are very specific on whatever you see written is both the reality of the game and a metaphor within the world of the game. Like you're choosing a location in Wonder Home to be a bridge. And yeah, it's going to be a bridge, but also it's going to be this liminal space that connects one person to the next that maybe not it's not very tended to. It may be a place where connections are in need of repairs, and it's just like this perfect, it's very poetic.
I think the game of Wander Home 2 is it feels like a song. Like it was written like with almost like a musicality to it, with the changing of seasons and just like how life goes on. And I really like how it can be a really slow moving game. It's not fast paced. It's like you're gonna exist and live in the season you're in the place you're in for as long as you possibly must, and then you'll move on. And I just think that the journey of that is also missing from a lot of TTRPGs that are combat based because it's like, oh, we got to do this, 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 and this because who knows what's going to come and get us at this next moment. So I think just being able to like breathe while you play is nice.
Celebrations are so inherent to it as well. So it's just beautiful and it feels really wholesome.
I talked to Janine and Tati yesterday, and that is exactly the same word they use to describe Wander Home as wholesome. I think it should just be Wander Home, a wholesome TTRPG,
Yeah,
because that's
that's
what
it.
everybody describes it as, so
Yeah.
might as well.
Yeah. And it's the same initials, WH.
It does.
When you mirror them, you get Monster Hearts because they're
You're
so
right.
wholesome.
You're right. Yeah, we really did jump from Monster Hearts to Wander Home, complete 180 in the
Whiplash.
world. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, speaking of world building, how was it to work with Harper and the rest of the crew during your guys' development process? Because I know that I wasn't really a part of that. So how did that
It was so cool. I've done a bunch of world building by myself. Sometimes I've done world building just like talking with a friend, kind of like, okay, let's figure this out. But I've never done world building for a game where I was going to be a player with the rest of the other players. And I don't, like, I never expected we were going to take so long to do it. And I am, I say that with like a wide smile of, I'm so happy we spent so much time considering, okay, so where are we? Why are we here? What's, who are our gods? Why are they what they are? And all of that just felt constantly really interesting. Just figuring them out, the pronunciations of the gods and why that's so diverse.
I want to let you know that my favorite god so far is the one that you created, the god of bedtime stories.
Oh, the small god of bedtime
yes.
stories. I am on page 4 of a little of that tale.
I'm
doing something there as well. There's a little poem as well that goes with it. It's a little side project, but yeah, it's I'm really excited to maybe explore that a bit deeper, I hope.
It actually gave me like a bunch of inspiration, because I feel like in the worlds that I build, a lot of times if it's fantasy based, there are like just big gods or like two or one, and like that's how the world works. But I think it's so interesting if you have varying levels of deities that can influence even the smallest little bit of life in the world.
That all of us kind of like come up with one or two small gods, and it just populates the world and just like really focuses on the smallness of things. And when we're playing, we're constantly like shown objects that we understand as small, but that in the world of our characters, they are like kind of big. Like you're going to see this key that is like quite big. Oh, that's some context for you there on the key, the mystery key that appeared the other day.
I know. I did get to that part in the editing, so I did hear what it was.
Cool.
And that was exciting. This episode of Queer PG is brought to you by Publishing Goblin and their new game, Confluence: The Living Archive. Confluence is a genre-bending game of fantasy, sci-fi, and horror, built to tell character-driven stories. Explore the beautiful and original setting of Ageria, where phenomena called confluxes bring people together, space and time be damned. Use magic alongside technology to cook your favorite meals, rebel against corrupt power systems, explore sites long forgotten, and create colorful characters and companions for your next journey. Confluence is an original D6 dice pool engine with fully customizable character creation that drives and changes with the narrative you tell. The story leader guides the players with the help of the Atlases, a setting guide full of in-universe documents and stories to uncover, to fully immerse the table in the mystical, whimsical, and colorful world of Ageria. With a team of almost 100% queer folks, a Confluence RPG and a Queer PG partnership seemed inevitable, and we are very excited about watching this game come to life. Confluence RPG, coming to BackerKit October 15th.
A few miles out to sea, hundreds of feet above the ocean, floats a cluster of islands, seemingly tied together by countless floating bridges and roads.
This is my friend Fletcher. They're the most wonderful witch. They're gonna be great.
It's hard to be awake, especially when the sun is right up.
This is Alma. She is a grave digger. She's very familiar with the magics of the other side.
Our gods are gone.
And Haku, our star child, knows of all things up in the sky.
I still haven't found the star keeper.
And Neu, our weaver. Neu can weave the most fantastical fabrics and put the most wonderful meaning in them.
I know that we shouldn't trust oracles, but if it is Fallon's, maybe it is the only one we can trust.
My friends and I have been tasked by Fallon
to leave the last of.
She seems just a little confused. No one really leaves the lastings.
All episodes of Kith and Pen are out on QueerPG.
The mists roll across the valley over the bodies of hundreds of dead as a large figure rises above the mountains, too large to be anything mortal.
Enter Pocket Bard. Immersive audio made easy. With an ever-expanding music library, Pocket Bard has made soundscaping for your TTRPG needs seamless and so very simple. The easy-to-use app provides you with scenes that include ambiance, weather patterns, quick and easy sound effects, as well as backing music with just a touch of a button. Transitioning from town to a long travel journey? Don't worry. A large selection of the music and soundscapes adjust to your adventures, transitioning seamlessly into the next scene. You'll unlock a wide variety of music for all genres of play so that you can weave an incredible tapestry that'll make playing at your table even more memorable than it already was. Check out Pocket Bard at www.pocketbard.app or head to your nearest app store on iOS or Android to access the magic right now.
Have you been wanting to bring your home games to the next level? Maybe you're looking for the perfect holiday gift for the TTRPG-loving person in your life. Well, during the Hero Forge Black Friday sale, you can get savings as big as the stories you tell. Maybe you're a DM and you want to gift something physical to your players of their player characters in your campaign. Or maybe you're a player and you want to give the gift of an NPC in the form of a miniature. You can save 20% on physical miniatures and accessories, such as their iconic color plastic miniatures, their new, super cute custom acrylic keychains, or their 3D printed custom dice, as well as 50% on digital miniatures and STL files. The sale ends December 1st, so don't delay! Restrictions apply. Head to heroforge.com/sale for more details.
The Badlands. Legend has it that beneath the dust, something old and powerful still whispers to any gunslinger foolish enough to listen. One day, aboard a doomed train into the wastes, three unlucky travelers hear that call. A runaway socialite, a shape-shifting bounty hunter, and a retired thief turned family man. Will our outcasts find what they're looking for?
I mean, we're already here. Let's have a little fun.
You really went in there, guns blazing.
I thought that was the plan.
My potions are miraculous.
I thought we were being quiet.
Oh, Stump only has one volume. Sorry.
Wild roses grow out of his mouth, having filled his lungs.
What's happening out there?
Violence.
Find out on Mage Hand High Five.
I don't know if you've ever seen the animated series Over the Garden Wall.
No.
I think that's what it's called.
Okay.
Yeah, it's called Over the Garden Wall. It came out like almost a decade ago at this point, but it gives me the same vibes as Wander Home gives me, I think. It's just like these two brothers who get lost in the woods, and every episode they go on another little mini adventure, and they find it's like a new season or a new town. And I think the way that they have their journey is just similar to the way that Wander Home sets up journeys for people. So if you can find that anywhere, I would highly suggest it. It's cute.
Okay, I'll have a look. I think another good parallel for Wander Home is if you imagine just like Merry and Pippin being just happy in the Shire, traveling around, going from like second breakfast to third breakfast, from these place in the Shire to these other, going through all of the celebrations. I think that is a Wander Home campaign.
And you play a little fox, New. What was the inspiration for New? How'd you come up with them?
Oh, okay, that's a question. So when I write poetry, or when I make NPCs or PCs that are important to me, I kind of like look inwards and I tried to understand myself through a thing called parts work. And it's kind of like understanding the parts of yourself that want things and that need things and that voice their needs and their wants or that hide from voicing them. And there's two parts of myself that I kind of like poured into now. First one is this shyness and this insecurity and this need for like avoidance. And this just kind of, I am here, but it's okay if I'm not, on one side. And then the other side, and these are two parts that don't clash because they avoid each other, because they don't really care about each other. But then I got the other part will be the kind of like the creator side of myself that likes to be like, hey, I'm here. Look at the cool thing that I did. Or I'm going to take this experience that I had and make something out of it. And I wanna create, I wanna do things. I wanna show people good things and good times. And when you mix them together, you get this little guy who enjoys creating things, but is very insecure about them, and who enjoys being with people and really likes people that bring intensity, because kind of like can live experiences through them and ends up really wanting to be with people that may not be very good for them because they're not that important anyway. And they get to see what the important people do and then make tapestries about it, make art about it, and then show people that art. And there's a bunch of things in there, but I think that's the headline.
How is New then dealing with the fact that they've felt like they're not the important person and now have become an important person?
I think it began to like hit home in episode 6. When Neo is being like told, there's this crew of angry people in here. They need to be soothed. Go do something. And Neo goes in there and tells a story and people chill. And
they listen to them.
And they listen and they listen to them. And not only that, but then we have we have Chandler that at that point still hadn't done the redemption painting and the redemption picnic, and we still were like, are you a bit of a waste of space or what's happening with you? And Chandler still was nice and kind of like amped up Neo. And that's when I think Neo began to think maybe I am worth something by myself. But before that, very struggling. I'm not, the fact that Neo was so high when he left the Lastings was probably the only reason why it wasn't a moment of, no, I shouldn't go. Also like fleeing from a breakup. So like easy avoidance. I'm just going to
leave. Yeah, that was the easiest way to get them out of there.
Yeah.
This is your first time playing Wanderhome, so I guess there's not a comparison here, but is this the first time you've played any game that's like recorded for a show?
Yeah. Yeah.
Does it feel any different from when you play in a home game, aside from the fact that you know we're recording it, or does it kind of feel the same sort of way?
It was very nerve-wracking at the beginning. At the beginning, and like there was a moment where I just went to Mishi and I was like, help me. and we had this call and she was kind of like explaining to me like, you should do this to relax before a game, get yourself some tea, breathe in, breathe out. This is how you get constant with your voice and how you get in character with your voice. And after that, like, I'm still trying to get there, but because also I have no voice training of any sorts. And I'm still trying to get there, but I felt more and more confident. And honestly, the thing is, any like after the first couple of interactions of any game, I'm just into it. I'm very, I'm just like really easy to suck in. I'm really easy to be, I'm really easily immersed.
I mean, I think that's kind of the important part is as soon as you can like get into the world, then all you have to do is be there. Mm-hmm. And you don't really have to think about if your voice is on, because it most likely will be, because you're already in the world of the game.
Mm-hmm. Yes, exactly. Yeah. And that's the other reason why I did want to have a little bit of an accent and a little bit of a voice for now. So I thought, I'm just going to go for my own accent, just my accent from a few years ago. And that's easy because it's my own accent, just like different moments in time.
Has your accent shifted a lot from leaving Spain?
Yeah. So yeah. I left Spain when I was about 21. I'm now older than that.
I saw you think about whether you wanted to say your age or not.
I am now older than that. And in this undisclosed amount of years, my accent has changed a lot. What has changed the most is the effort that it takes to live in a different language. Because at the beginning, it's just exhausting. Like, I will just not listen to any media in English. Just like, I could not by the end of my day. But I don't know, I think that in like year two or three, there's like a switch and things became much easier. And then at some point, things just become totally second nature. So now I'm trilingual.
Okay, so Spanish, English, and?
Speaks another language, which is Catalan. It's just another kind of like Latin language, kind of like similar to Italian or Portuguese or French, just its own thing. And we get schooled in both Spanish and Catalan as we grow up. So pretty much like everyone is inherently bilingual, which feels like cheating. And then we just need to learn one more language and we're trilingual.
Did you know English before you moved out of Spain?
So I knew enough English that I could attend a university kind of lecture, record it, then go back home, listen to it, and then do actual notes. Like that's the level I was operating at. Pretty okay, but also then I almost failed all of my exams in the first quarter because like I was just not able to write in English fast enough. It's only on the second semester that I realized actually I can ask for special accommodation and I get more time. I'm like,
there you go.
You have known.
You could have been doing this the whole time.
Yeah. Why do you not choose the easy road ever?
Yeah. Well, I think it's actually a advantage to have to learn two languages in mm-hmm. school from the beginning. Yeah. I think that's advantageous. And 100%. It truly makes me so angry that that is not important in the American school systems at all.
Learning a language is such like, and I like, we kept being told this at school. And of course, you're at school, they're trying to like teach you more things. You're like, no. That's bullshit. but like, it is very true that learning a language is a great pathway onto learning a new culture, onto being able to understand and relate to someone else that is very different from you on a one-on-one basis. They should teach gay in schools.
You know, they should.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think that that also weirdly is applicable to Wander Home too, of just learning, like, what are the pathways into learning other cultures? Because this game is so much about journeying around and meeting new people.
Yeah.
And I think that's true. I think that I am currently trying to learn Spanish enough that I can communicate with the guys who work in the kitchen at my job. Because so far, it's us just pointing at things and like miming what we need from one another. And
Terry Pratchett from Discworld, he wrote that if we yell and gesticulate loud and quickly enough, anyone can understand anyone.
I don't think I realized that Terry Pratchett was the author of that because I've read other stuff of his, I believe.
He did Good Omens with Neil Gaiman.
Yes.
They were like super, super friends.
Yeah.
I think they did something else as well. Book. Yeah.
I have read a lot more Neil Gaiman than I have read Terry Pratchett, though, I think. I like a lot of his stuff.
It's great as well. He's super good.
Yeah. Did you watch the show Good Omens when it was out?
Yes.
Okay, just checking. I don't know. I don't think they did a great job.
Yeah, it was great. And I really enjoyed it. I really enjoyed it. And it was also a great excuse to just reread the books.
Mm-hmm. I hadn't read the book until the show came out. And then I was like, I should read the book. So I did.
It's good. It's good. It's just such a good, like, lovers to lovers plot.
Mm-hmm. Truly, I was talking with, I think it was Janine, about how we both really like enemies to lovers, but sometimes the wholesome nature of just people who are in love forever is a nice, refreshing storyline. Well, we're almost coming to the end here. So before you go, I have one last question. I think it's a fun one.
Okay, I'm ready.
Can you tell me one of your favorite moments in a game? Like something that's really fun, something that's really emotional, just something that you like look back on and remember fondly?
That's really difficult. Oh, no. That's super difficult. I'm not right for this question.
Well, listen, it doesn't have to be like, you can say a story. It's not like, it doesn't have to be your top moment.
Okay.
Just, you know, something that you enjoyed.
Okay. So I'm also trying to like find a story that doesn't take like, because like with role playing and D&D stories, like I can be, like, it's difficult to explain it in a way that doesn't just get an answer of, oh, okay. Where is
the but you Anyhow, know, you're okay, explaining it to me who loves hearing this. So
okay.
So. I'm gonna enjoy it.
Let's go for that. So it's in this world of Discworld, and my character is basically a patchwork man made of almost like a trifecta between Igor, Dr. Frankenstein, and the Frankenstein monster, just all mashed into a single character. And as part of that, there's parts of my memory that I don't understand or can relate to. And there was this big kind of like reveal moment a few sessions ago, where through a combination of drugs, sleep, and a little bit of magic, we got to travel into the deep subconscious world of my character. And the DM, they made it so strangely dreamy. The guide for the dream was a velociraptor with like a top hat carrying a cup of tea, and it was surrealistic, but it was also very horror based. It was in this kind of like almost like vampire castle, and I got to meet my older sister that I didn't know I had, and she was treating me as if I was a little child, and then they took me over this like horror, very immersive kind of like castle walk, where we're walking along the ceiling and got to the dinner table. And it was a strange dinner with parents that I didn't know I had, and that were completely different from what I imagined. And then I got to actually talk to them and address some like deep-seated trauma of my character that I didn't know where it was coming from. And it was just weird. And then vampires came in and just eviscerated my mom in front of me, which was like, what is happening? What is happening? Why is this happening to me? And then my character woke up and it was snowing. And it was cold. And there was a lot of emotions. It wasn't necessarily, I'm realizing it was a very sad story.
It's okay. It was one you remembered though.
Yeah. How am I not supposed to not remember that?
That is your DM took you on a wild ride.
They keep doing that.
Yeah.
They keep doing that.
And it also feels like there are like 50 different genres going into this game that you're playing. Mm-hmm. That's kind of fun and interesting.
Yeah. And which is kind of like the trademark of Discworld, and the fact that they can translate that into a game just blows my mind. Because how do you keep a game serious, horrible, tragic, while you're being guided by a T-Rex carrying a teacup? You know, what's happening here?
I guess the thing is, like, knowing that your players are going to buy into the world and, like, being able to trust that. But yeah, that the element of whimsy mm-hmm. in, like, a horror setting is yeah. a hard line to have.
Absolutely. And yeah, wow. So that was aside from how emotional it was also kind of like spectacular DM skills that I was like, mm-hmm. oh, you're amazing.
Well, thank you for sharing that with me. And thank you so much for coming on and chatting with me for a little bit.
Absolutely.
It's been wonderful to get to know you more and hear about all the games you've been playing. For everybody listening and or watching, if you're on our Patreon, until next time. Bye, everybody.
See you. Bye-bye.